A lot of the conversations are about preferring other language, so it's unclear why. I agree that switching languages is difficult, but it also sounds like saving C++ is near impossible.
Oh, I mean, very, very simple answer about why not only I want to save C++, but everybody should want to save C++. I'm lazy. C++ has one of the largest bodies of existing written code out there. And if C++ becomes a sunset language, over time, that code is going to get harder and harder to maintain. And eventually, inevitably, large amounts of that code will have to be rewritten.
Welcome to ADSP, the podcast, episode 151, recorded on October 9th, 2023. My name is Connor, and today with my co-host Bryce, we respond to some of the comments we got on episode 150, Is C++ Dying? We chat about why C is the lingua franca of FFI target languages and more.
This is great because now during the podcast, I can walk around and be distracted and do all sorts of other things.
I mean, we'll see. We'll see. Well, this will be a good test run. I'll let the audience know you're testing out a new mic situation.
Yes. And it's, well, we could explain to the audience, I'm just like traveling so frequently these days, going back and forth between Albany and New York, and then like just actually traveling on the road, that I am so infrequently at my desk with my actual microphone that I just went out and bought a an actual decent Rode microphone that's small that I can take when I'm traveling, because some listeners pointed out that the audio quality of the last episode was oddly worse than the audio quality of some of our Rode episodes where we did have a professional
Just to be clear, dear listeners, the reason that we had such crispy audio quality while we were on the road is because I also have a Rode microphone, but that is an actual high-grade interview professional thing that you have to hold with a little stick, and That's why it sounds pretty good. So wait, are you in Albany right now?
Yes, but it's Albany. It's not Albany.
Albany. All right. I apologize to our New Yorkers. I was just out... I mean, we're getting off track here already, folks, but I was just outside Albany, and
What? And you didn't tell me?
I didn't know you were in Albany.
Connor!
I was in the Adirondacks. That's where I was, folks. And
when?
Literally, I got back to... We are recording this. Happy Canadian Thanksgiving. I'm only qualifying that because most of you will be confused, but it is the one and only true Thanksgiving. Also, we should respect the fact that it's also Indigenous Peoples Day, probably a more important day. But a lot that Bryce has to say. He's trying to interrupt me, of course. But I just got back on Sunday from a, four-day conference, invitation only, and it was fantastic. It's going to lead to one of our discussion topics, but I'll let you speak because I can tell you've got some questions and some thoughts.
Well, first of all, Connor, this is the second time that you have been in my vicinity and not come to visit me, and that is not okay. So the next time I see you, I am going to sew an air tag probably into your clothes, but if you're resistant, into your skin, so that I just know where you are at all times.
What you really want is to put the air tag in my carry-on, which typically goes when I travel internationally, that typically goes with me. I did not know you were in Albany, though. It's like a, you know, several-hour drive, and I was being driven by someone else, so I did not have the ability to do a little, you know, date.
I would have taken the car and come and visited you.
From New York, New York?
No, from Albany.
Yeah, but I didn't know. This is on you. I did not know you were not in New York, New York, and that you were in Albany, New York. So that's on you. That's not on me.
I'll just share my... How many air tags do you think I have?
I don't know.
No, I guess.
I have zero, so I'm going to guess you've got like three.
I have 12 air tags.
Okay, seems unnecessary. You just missed Bryce describing all his air tags. I'll be sure to speed that up because guaranteed nobody cares.
I thought it was pretty interesting. So, I mean, I do have a topic. I've been trying to get you to schedule time to chat with me for like the past few days because I've been excited. I got an exciting thing.
All right,
we are going to reverse roles. Although having talked to two other people in your orbit about this same problem, both of them indicated that you almost certainly are going to immediately know the answer to this coding problem. And it's going to make all of my very human, relatable bumbling around when you quiz me, I'm just going to look very pathetic in comparison, I think.
It's okay. And I'm excited. And part of the reason, you know, I was unavailable was because I was abroad and, I was near you. You know, technically we could have recorded if you...
buddy, going from Toronto to the Northeast is not abroad.
Okay.
I understand you crossed an international border. That is not abroad.
Here, let's just check. I want to check Albany, New York. Because I was not in the popular spots of the Adirondacks. I was sort of in the south area, which I believe is pretty close to Albany. So let's actually check. For those that know, I was in the town of Indian Lake. It's the middle of nowhere, folks. Indian Lake, we're looking it up. And by car, it's an hour and 45 minutes. So we could have had a podcast in the wild, a first, folk. I mean, we've had podcasts on a walk, podcasts in a car. Soon we're going to be having podcasts at the top of mountains. And we could have had podcasts in a park. I have had a park pod on one of my other podcasts. Anyways, we will get straight into your problem after two recaps. So first things we want to mention is, well, I got to thank you personally, Bryce, for your hot takes on episode 150. It, as expected, is trending very well statistically. I've gotten an above average number of people DMing me. One person said,
and I believe that was also the episode where I trash talked another podcast.
Yes, yes, and they caught wind. Also, I apologize for not knowing. This is kind of on.
Do I have to be a guest on another podcast now?
That hasn't been set up yet, but I have to apologize. But this is kind of on Oxide and Friends, the podcast. They don't go around at the beginning of each podcast recording and like say their names and introduce themselves, which makes sense because it's like an open discussion, which is why I don't really know the names of the characters. But the person specifically that was talking with Brian Cantrell, his name is Adam Leventhal. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. And he's at AHL on Twitter. For folks that want to go check him out.
Is he the one that I...
Yes, yes.
That I insulted?
Yes.
I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry.
So, you know, we got a couple people that I didn't at Adam or Brian in the tweet about the podcast, but then a couple people in the comments added him, and then he ended up retweeting, saying that it wasn't very nice. I'm pretty sure he was being sarcastic because he made a joke about, like, you're punching down, man. We don't even have a podcast intro jingle. So I'm pretty sure it was all in good fun, but we had one person DM me saying that they were pretty sure this was the end for them and they had to stop listening. Listen, folks, if you need to stop listening, feel free to just stop listening and not let us know. Like, we're not going to change anything because you may or may not be upset by what we said.
Wait, what was their objection?
Would you like me? I won't reveal them by name. But I know, well, we actually don't know.
Is it somebody I know?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
But, I'm actually going to need to go to the ADSP Twitter, which requires me opening up Firefox, because that's the only thing I use Firefox for folks, is not having to switch Twitter accounts on the website. I keep my Firefox logged into the ADSP Twitter account. And
you know, there's like on the phone, there's a very simple.
It's easy to do it on the phone. It's almost as easy to do it on the computer. But here, this is the DM that I got from an individual that might not be listening to episode 151. And they have actually messaged me in the past.
Now, if they went through the trouble to send a DM, they're still listening. They're not going to be after this one.
And this person in the past, they've messaged me multiple times complaining about your interrupting either guests or me, I've been trying to console them, being like, don't worry, I'm trying to keep him in line, you know, but he's entertaining, he's, you know, he may ruffle your feathers, but you know, it's kind of like being a character, whether you tune in because you don't like them or you tune in because you do like them, you want to tune in.
I'm definitely the bad guy of this podcast.
Anyways, this is this individual who won't be named, and they write, wow, this latest episode is so disappointing. I am 17 minutes in, and I think it's the last straw for me. It feels so conservative to not listen to outside opinions, discard criticism, and almost attack a stranger for their opinions. And that's all they wrote, folks. I didn't reply, because what do you say to that? do you have a response, Bryce?
I do think that if you listen to what I was saying, I was not rejecting outside criticism. I think I acknowledged and in fact agreed with the basic premise of what they were saying. I just disliked the way it was being expressed, and felt that they were viewing C++ through a lens of like the early 2000s.
Yep, fair. I mean, I think there were some spicy takes, some spicy back and forth, but honestly, I think it's all in good fun. And like I think I even said mid-podcast, hot takes are great, you know? Nobody wants to hear a boring, monotonous, well, you know, it's nuanced, back and forth. It's good to have hot takes.
Yeah.
We did also, I wasn't going to mention this, but we did get a comment from this one was a comment, so it wasn't a DM, so I can mention their name. Hopefully I'm going to pronounce this correctly, but if not, I apologize. Alexander Banduquala. And they wrote, would love an episode. It's not going to be this one, although we might get some brief comments if they're, you know, constrained to less than 60 seconds from Bryce, about why you want to save C++. A lot of the conversations are about preferring other language, so it's unclear why. I agree that switching languages is difficult, but it also sounds like saving C++ is near impossible.
Oh, I mean, very, very simple answer about why not only I want to save C++, but everybody should want to save C++. I'm lazy. And I hope everybody else is lazy too. C++ has one of the largest bodies of existing written code out there. And if C++ becomes a sunset language, over time, that code is going to get harder and harder to maintain. And eventually, inevitably, large amounts of that code will have to be rewritten entirely in a different language. And there's just no world in which that that migration does not come with a grave cost. I don't want to pay that cost. I would like the world to be able to continue using C++ code for the next 50, 60 years and have it be a healthy part of the ecosystem. I'm not saying that every new project should be written in C++. I think there are some that should be. But I don't want the existing body of code to have to be rewritten or replaced, because that if we have to do that solely because the C++ language has become stagnant, that would be a huge waste. A lot of people get excited about like rewriting a project from scratch, like starting over, you know, oh, we can do everything right this time. Oh, I don't want to do that. That just sounds like a lot of work. And I would much rather work smart than hard. And I think it's really good to be lazy in this field and to not reinvent the wheel. That's why I think we should want to save C++. Because like it's here today, we have a ton of code written in it, and that code is important.
Yeah, and your answer kind of highlights why three of the four main successor initiatives, although I guess you might not consider Circle a successor initiative, but it's always listed in the list, three of them are trying to maintain a very good story for backwards compatibility. CPP front, yeah. Basically, you can just, you know, CPP2 just, or CPP front compiles to C++, everything works. Carbon has like a first class story for trying to interop, and they're trying to build tools for where it won't work. And Circle is just an advanced C++ state-of-the-art compiler. I think Val, which also we got another comment. Ooh, let's bring up my LinkedIn because I'll mention them by name as well, except I need to switch back to Chrome now, so I don't need to sign in. I got a comment that was, you mentioned Val, and it's no longer called Val. We need to start calling it by its real name. This was Chris Van Rens, I believe. Yes. And yes. The new name for it is Hilo. So we're going to trip up and call it Val. And I thought about going back and renaming our episodes, because while we were talking with Sean Parent when we were in Folkestone in the UK for CPP on C, it was still named Val. But then by the time I think some of those episodes came out, or right after, it got renamed to Hilo. We're leaving it as Val back there, but going forward, we will try to call it Hilo. But Hilo is really, of the four of those initiatives, Circle, CPP Front, and Carbon, Hilo's the only one that isn't trying to prioritize backwards compat. And I still think they are trying to have some kind of story, like they'll have a, you know, maybe a from C++ to Hilo, you know, documentation, but the other three are all have really good stories. And a part of...
And honestly, I'm not sure if that's... part of me thinks that that's a great idea to not focus on the backwards compatibility. The reason being, it's real hard to be compatible with C++. Part of me thinks if you don't focus on it from the start of the language, it'll never happen. But like, if you do focus on it from the start of the language, then it may consume your entire effort. There's a relevant story that I tell Ramona all the time. I'm going to tell it, but I think Connor's going to speed it up.
Well, we have to decide. Are we going to try, is do you want your algorithm question to be a separate episode, or are we going to try and squeeze it into the end of this discussion?
I don't know. I'm going to let you make that decision.
How long do you think it's going to take? 10 minutes? 15? 30?
Oh, 15, 30 minutes. You know what? We're gonna skip the Bryce story.
Okay, we'll skip the Bryce story.
I can be a responsible adult. But actually, what we're just talking about here brings up an interesting question, which I've never, I think, thought about deeply before. But I think is something that both of us know to be true, which is, C++ is a really poor interface language. And by that, I mean, like, it is a poor language to be used as a medium for other languages to interoperate with. Now, C, on the other hand, is freaking great. Like, C is the de facto ABI language. Like if you want to write a library, if you want to have two different, you know, languages or libraries or things interact, you define a C ABI or a C API, and then that has a C ABI. And, you know, there's a number of reasons for this. One, the nature of C means that you have less stuff boil up into the API that has a platform-specific ABI nature to it. And I guess also, like, less of the type system is exposed. Like, what else is it that makes C a better interface language than C++? What do you think? I mean, I think we know this to be true, right?
Yes. I mean, it is the lingua franca of FFI, and like almost any language that builds an FFI, it's to target C.
Right.
I don't actually know.
And if you look at like ways of like interfacing between like C++ and Python, like they're, at least the last time I did anything in that space, they're all horrific. And I'm just going to assume that they're, you know, if they're better today, they might be a little bit better, but they're still probably pretty horrific.
Yeah, and I'm not a... I'm sure there's, you know, 10% of our listeners are better people to ask for the answer, but, like, in my mental model, C is a much simpler language. That doesn't necessarily...
Simplicity is what...
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily mean it's a better language, but it is much simpler. Like, there's no facilities for, you know, generics or an equivalent of templates. And also the evolution of C... Although it is ongoing and they are adding things and there is a C committee that is active, I think they are much, much more conservative in the language changes that they make. And that leads to a much more stable target for an FFI in terms of like if something is getting updated you know, every 3 years with a bunch of new language changes in terms of like lambdas and stuff like that, then you're going to have people saying, oh, you know, I want to be able to target this library that uses X, but I can't do that now because the FFI capabilities of the language that I'm using doesn't support the new, you know, C11 standard or something like that. Whether that or not that's actually the right answer, I don't actually know, but in my head, that's what it is.
My gut reaction was simplicity too, but I suspect that there's something deeper there because there are other languages that are simple, right? I mean, perhaps part of it is C's dominance in systems programming for so long that because it was a simple language and because it was the language that platform APIs tend to be written in terms of pretty much every language had to interface with it. And so it just sort of became the de facto standard. And maybe maybe simplicity isn't really why it won, as the lingua franca, as you said, but maybe it was just early market dominance. Certainly, I think if we talk about why C++ is not a good interface language, the answer is lack of simplicity. C++ has a fairly complex type system and template system. And that type system gets exposed directly in the spelling of symbols, in functions and types that other languages would have to interface with.
Yeah,
and like to interface to a C++ object, you have to, you know, you have to deal with polymorphism, with C++'s way of doing polymorphism to interface with C++ functions, to interface with what we in the C++ world would see as a function, which may include multiple different overloads of the same name. You know, if you're in a language that doesn't have a notion of overloading, each one of those may be a different function. And if you're in a language that does have some notion of overloading, then you still, like, your notion of overloading may be different than C++'s notion of overloading. And so it's if you look at a simpler question as like, what is a function? In C is a very simple, straightforward answer. C++, I would argue, does not have a simple, straightforward answer to that. Because what we as C++ programmers think of as a function might actually be really a function template or an overloaded, you know, function that boils down to multiple different actual function entry points in the you know, the binary ABI representation that other languages would have to interface with.
Yeah.
So certainly lack of simplicity is why C++ is not the lingua franca. But is simplicity really the key thing that makes C the lingua franca? Perhaps it's the nature of the C type system where you have these sort of fuzzy sized types. Maybe it's...
I think what you said earlier is a huge component of it, though. Like C has a 50-year head start, and maybe a language like Zig is actually a better language to target as an FFI target, but Zig is created in the last 10 years, and there's not, like, I don't know what the number of libraries that are designed in C or system libraries that were designed either because they were designed decades ago or they were recently designed, but they wanted to be good targets for FFI, so it's just like, because it's what is it, like the rich gets richer? Like, they had a 50-year head start, and there are probably languages out there or languages that could be designed that would be better targets, but they don't have a 50-year head start and they don't have the ecosystem of languages.
The answer here really may be not to compare C to contemporary languages, but really to ask ourselves, if we turn the clock back, if we go back to the 70s, what really made C successful compared to its contemporary languages? And specifically, what made it successful as the systems programming language? And this is not a question that is an unknown question. It's been talked about, perhaps even talked about to death in other podcasts, other literature, other mediums.
What were the other systems languages at the time?
I don't know. I personally have no idea.
I don't know either. I mean, I the only one I can think of is Ada, and I actually don't know what year that was created. And I can rattle you off a bunch of other popular languages from the 70s and 80s, like Smalltalk and Pascal and etc. But like none of those were systems languages.
Ada and Smalltalk, Ada and Smalltalk, I think, let's talk about those briefly, because I think they have some similarities there.
Ada and Smalltalk?
In comparison to C.
Okay. I mean, like, they're very dissimilar languages, though, correct? I don't know.
Yeah, but they're but in terms of level of complexity.
Okay.
Did they both have an object model? Did they? I know Ada does now. Did it back in the day?
I know very little about Ada, other than what it's one of the very few languages that has fixed point and bounded integer types as a part of their type system.
I mean, Smalltalk certainly was an object-oriented language from the start, right?
Yes. I mean, it is.
And okay.
It is the.
I'm fairly certain, just based on the first sentence of the Ada wiki, that it's also an object-oriented programming language from the start.
Okay.
Is Pascal an object-oriented language?
I don't know much about Pascal, other than it was one of Wirth's
languages. Isn't there Object Pascal, which was a later derivative of it? Specifically for object-oriented programming?
Maybe. I know that Pascal led to Delphi or Delphi.
Right. So I would say that the reason that Ada and Smalltalk probably didn't succeed as a lingua franca...
I got to clear this up.
...is the same reason that C++ fails in comparison to C, which is that they're substantially more complex languages, and in particular, they're languages with an object model. And figuring out how to interface to objects is harder than figuring out how to interface to simple structs and functions.
There's a couple listeners that are like screaming in their heads right now because you've misunderstood what I said. I was rattling off a couple popular languages that would never have been the lingua franca FFI target because they're not systems. Like Smalltalk is like a totally GC'd, not the most performant message passing system that... lives in like a workspace similar to APL that like you don't have like written text, you have like workspaces that you load. And so, and like you can only develop in Smalltalk in like a specific IDE that's built for the language. Like it would be impossible.
You know, and I get that. And I was confused while you were listening to that, but Ada is different.
So yeah, Ada is, that's, but that was the only, so I said the only systems language that I know that might be a contender would be Ada, but like all the other languages I know wouldn't be contenders because I don't think like a GC.
I think Pascal's actually. I think the question is really why did because Pascal is the contemporary of C, right? I think the question is like why C not Pascal?
I mean, Pascal wasn't very popular. Like Pascal.
Yeah, but why not?
I mean, I'm not an expert in Pascal. We'd have to have someone on. But like the high level things that I know about Pascal are that. Is that it was taught a lot in schools. There were a bunch of people that really liked it. But at the end of the day, from like a programming language theory point of view, like they introduced a lot of interesting concepts that then other languages adopted. But like it had these fatal flaws that made it very difficult to like build large scale programs and like really be productive in. What those are, I do not know. If you are a Pascal person, feel free to leave a comment on Twitter or a comment on our GitHub discussion in the podcast notes. But I just know that like Pascal was an interesting language. It had a certain in its heyday, a modicum of success, but no one was really surprised at the end of the day when it didn't like thrive. I think I could be wrong. I'm sort of, like I said, high level from what I know. Pascal is a language I know very little about compared to Smalltalk.
Well, I'm like at risk of offending some more of the listener. We got to have some old person on here to teach us some things about the history of C.
Sure. I mean, we got to have a lot of folks on. I mean, we got a couple comments that said you have to get Brian Cantrell on as like fast as possible. So I don't think Brian listens to this, but we will reach out to Brian. I mean, I think we have a list of folks that we... I mean, we still have a long list of folks from when we talked to Jane, which was the start... And then very quick end of our Us Becoming a Rust podcast. but we were supposed to have a bunch of folks on. Esteban, who worked a lot on the error messages. We were supposed to have JT on to talk about, you know, the working on the community aspect of Rust and why it became super successful. Anyways, lots of folks. And we will also have someone who is a C expert and see. I was thinking about this. Is veteran a word that you should not be using? Because I referred to in a couple talks, I said that I referred to APL people that I chatted with as these APL veterans. And in hindsight, I was like, I probably should have just said experts. But I'm not sure. Is it on a list of words, or is it okay to say veteran?
It's not on the list of words that I worked on, the insights and inclusive terminology list. However, there are the words on that list that are words that
are war related,
avoiding because they were military jargon or they had a military connotation. I generally think that it's best to avoid words that have any sort of military or war connotation if you can. I know that there are some people that are bothered by it.
The nice thing about the word veteran is I actually think it encapsulates a certain amount of respect, because you're trying to say not only are you an expert, but you're an expert that has been doing this for a long time. So it's both like experience and expertise. And I don't know, like expert covers 60% of that. I don't think anyone is going to be like, oh, you're just calling me an expert. I would prefer you point out that I've been doing this for decades. But anyways, yeah, probably best to...
I would avoid the term veteran because it does have a military connotation. However, I did take 2 years of college Latin and I learned very little, but very, very little. I took Latin in college because I figured it's a dead language. They can't make you speak it. Like, they would make you write it, but I was like, they can't make me speak it, and I'm terrible at pronouncing things. I was wrong. They made me try to pronounce Latin. I'm pretty certain that veteran comes from the Latin veteranus, something like that, which means like old, like experienced, and does not have a specific military connotation. I think the origin of the word doesn't have that, but since then, you know, culturally, you say veteran, you assume that people mean, people hear a military connotation to it. So that's why we should avoid it.
I mean, right after I said, you know, it doesn't capture the experience part, only the expert part by saying expert, I realized, you know what I could just say? Experienced experts. And that works just fine. So anyways, we gotta wrap up our last, stay tuned or a few episodes. There's one more thing. So we only are at point one of 2 points that we needed to bring up before we begin to get to Bryce's algorithm.
Oh boy.
But we're at the halfway point, and we need to record 2 more episodes tonight because Bryce is excited about something, but I'm also excited about something. Anyways, the other thing I want to mention before we get to episode 152 is that we had someone reach out on GitHub, if I can bring up that issue. And because we're short on time, I am not going to read the whole thing. But basically, it was a response to episode 149, where we were talking about my CityStrides root generation algorithm. And the GitHub user's name is Carstring. Let's see, if I click on this, it does have the name. The name is Chris Wesseling, and they are in Amsterdam. I think actually Chris might follow me on Strava. I could be wrong about that. But I think these are the same person, even though I have not made that connection. And he points out a bunch of stuff about graph theory and some optimizations. And I've also had a couple different comments from a couple different people that I know that all had some great suggestions, some about pruning, some about annealing, some about A-star algorithms. We will revisit the CityStride graph algorithm in the future. But the thing that I wanted to bring up is that I don't think I articulated well some of the specifics of the challenge that I was solving, which led people to be kind of confused. And one of the things that I should have mentioned is when you brought up weights, I should have said that, like, I don't want weights. Because weights, they not only do they not help, they hurt. Because a street in this graph, one edge does not represent one street. Streets are represented by multiple edges. So you can have...
But it's are all edges equidistant?
No. They all have different lengths.
Then you want weights.
No. Let me finish my point. So all I care about in my... Well, I care about multiple things. But the goal is to complete streets. Completing a partial street is worth nothing. I do not want weights and some algorithm that rewards me for completing segments of a street or parts of a street And also, too, you might be thinking, well, if you're completing part of a street, that's still getting you towards completing that street in the future. And the answer to that is not optimally, necessarily. There are some streets...
Okay, but...
Go ahead. What do you want to say?
But if you if it gives you a routing where...
I'm going to cut all this out probably. The point is, this problem has been not as well articulated. Anyways, we'll revisit the problem. I will articulate it better. The point is, weighted edges, not a great idea. Be sure to check the show notes either in your podcast app or at adspthepodcast.com for links to anything we mentioned in today's episode, as well as a link to a GitHub discussion where you can leave comments, thoughts, and questions. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed and have a great day.
Low quality, high quantity. That is the tagline of our podcast.
It's not the tagline. Our tagline is chaos with sprinkles of information.